May 23rd, 2011. This is Gerwick.net. Steve Gerwick with you. Today is the 12th anniversary of the passing of Owen Hart. And to help me talk about it and share some memories of the great Owen Hart, I have the eldest son of Stu and Helen Hart, Smith Hart, on the line today. How you doing, Smith?
I'm all right. Thanks, Steve.
Well, it's hard to believe. I know I'm sure it is for you as well. It's been 12 years since Owen has passed away. And, you know, sometimes they say that, you know, time passes, heals wounds. Is it any different? Does it feel any different today as we look back 12 years after the death of Owen?
Oh, definitely. It was very stinging and sudden when it happened. Now it's, you know, I've calmed down a lot about it all now. Like, there's been settlement and closure and things like that. But it's just, I think of Owen, you might say, almost on a daily basis. And, you know, there's a lot of division in the family resulting from ramifications of the settlement and just the ordeal of losing a brother, a second brother. You know, we lost my brother Dean about 5 years before that, but that was not a non-wrestling thing. So, but
where were you when you found out about Owen's passing?
I was sitting in my parents' kitchen where they were also, I was one of the few of my family that wasn't up the hill, a few, you know, just like practically next door at my sister Diana's, watching it on pay-per-view. And one of my friends from Ontario that I trained to wrestle at my first wrestling school called me and said, "Hey, I think your brother really got hurt or something." I said, "Well, whatever, you know, he's a great worker and, you know, Owen's great on his feet." And this guy said, "No, I really think he got hurt. He was coming down a wire, you know, and they cut it off and this and that. And I think something really went on." And Jim Ross babbled something and he says, you know, and I said, "I'm not watching it, but, you know, it's, practically told this guy that not to be such a mark and, you know, realize that Owen was, you know, like a cat and, you know, had nine lives and was really good on his feet with the aerial stuff. But anyway, he called me back and about the same time Vince McMahon called on the other line, telling my mother something. And then Martha called back and it was over then. Martha was shrieking and screaming that it was done, that she had just heard that Owen was actually pronounced dead. At which time my mother, you know, pretty much went nuts at the time. You know, a lot of screaming and shrieking and sobbing. My dad took it very stoically, but
that'd be just a.
It sort of chokes me up to think about it, actually. But
I mean, talk about the memories going back to there, and that's interesting that you said that. You know, I think
within 20 minutes of his death, there's people, you know, we lived next door to CFCN TV and radio, and they were down the hill. There's trucks, sitting there was trucks coming from farther away, radio and TV stations like the CBC and all that. Soon the whole yard was full of people that knew about it, and my brothers and sisters came barreling down the hill from Diana's house, and, you know, soon the whole family was, kind of in a united, stunned unison there at the house, just dealing with it. It just never. Then there's flowers arriving, you know, the next day from the WWE. You know, they were very concerned about it and very kind and conscientious. But there was stuff that we didn't even know or expect. You know, there's catering coming over and flowers and wreaths and, you know, and people writing from all around the world days later, and there's so many flowers in this huge house. Yes, I just keep showing them out to make room for the new ones.
I think what you said, that you were saying that, you know, the first reaction you had was, you know, that this is probably, you know, we've been kind of programmed watching wrestling as long as we have, that if somebody's injured, sometimes it could be a work and it's part of the storyline. And then I remember watching that pay-per-view, and I could definitely tell something was wrong, but I didn't know, you know, what the extent of it was. And then when Jim Ross came on the broadcast, and you could tell he was kind of broken up about it, and he said that, you know, we can confirm that Owen has passed away. It just was a surreal moment that, I guess it's one of those that you just never forget. And, you know, there's always been debate since, you know, since this has happened, should the show have gone on? Should they have canceled the show? I know from my own perspective watching that show, once Jim Ross tells me Owen Hart is gone, I can't watch a pay-per-view anymore. I just turned it off. I'm paying for the show, but who cares about the final two matches? You know, Owen's gone. And so where's your feelings as far as, you know, should the show have gone on, and should Vince have maybe pulled the plug on the show?
I don't think it would have made any difference to most of us if he had, stopped the show immediately or not. Like, from a promoter's point of view, I can understand that fans could have rioted. It could have been mass confusion and the doubts and all that. And why blow a gate and whatever else you might have blown in that case and thrown off your whole timetable. But, you know, having to maybe redo that TV show and all that. There was TV that can be considered, to be concerned about as well. I don't blame anybody for, my dad would have tried to, the show always went on with my father, whether this, that, you have a car accident, you only have half the wrestlers on the card, well, the damn referee's going to be wrestling, and maybe you're going to pull a couple of guys out of the crowd, that are sort of wrestling material. You do something, you do whatever you have to do. Baby faces are wrestling, baby faces, and, you change your role, and if you got a mask, somebody's going to be wrestling twice, and that kind of thing. And you try to give the fans a better show than ever in a case like that. And our fans in Western Canada and the border states were very good fans, and they appreciated the conditions sometimes we had to travel in, and, our fans were like family there, without the Native Indians. We went to the reserve sometimes, but they'd come to the shows. They were great people. The rural farmers, they kept us kids alive over the lean years when we lost our TV show and stuff. Our fans were really loyal, dedicated people. They were real good folk.
What was the last conversation you had with Owen?
I'm not sure if I can remember. Nobody's ever asked me that. I'll try to recall that before I don't know if I can, but, one of the last conversations I had, Owen called the house, pretending to be a big fan of, one of our wrestlers. I think his son that was wrestling, with WWE, they're calling him, Jinder Mahal or something, that was Gamma Singh's, son. But Owen called up to be, in a kind of a Pakistani Hindu kind of voice, about the good wrestling and this, that, and he would do that to sort of get you going, lead you astray. You're going along with it, I didn't really care, I don't think we were even promoting wrestling at the time, but I said, yeah, he was great. Gamma was pretty good. I knew Gamma as an amateur, and in putting the story over as Owen, sort of led me to, baited me to do. And then all of a sudden he did it sort of gradually, but all of a sudden he's saying it's phony. And I said, what do you mean? And then he's getting quite vociferous about, we're all a bunch of pussies and actors and phonies and this and that. And I'm arguing with him. All of a sudden, it's not about a decent wrestler that we had broken into the business. All of a sudden, I'm arguing with some immigrants or some, ethnic about whether our livelihood or our sport is legitimate and all that. And he's getting, very stinging with his accusations and stuff. And all of a sudden, he burst out laughing. That was just one of his ribs. That was one of the last times I recall speaking going, and he'd done the same thing to my father earlier, same day.
Right. I wanted to, in particular when I was asking about maybe one of your last conversations, or maybe some of your last conversations, because when he went back to the Blue Blazer gimmick, a lot of people thought it was he was being punished for not doing so. I know there was a story that they wanted him to do something with Deborah and Jeff Jarrett at the time, kind of hint that there was some something going on with Owen there. He didn't want to really do it because he was a family man. He was married and had children.
Well, mostly his kids watched the show.
Right.
You know, they watched with adulation their father, and whether he's a Blue Blazer or Owen Hart, whatever. You know, he didn't want them getting the wrong ideas. That's all. Otherwise, he wouldn't have cared. It's just an act anyway. When you're trying to seduce a girl or something, or you
right.
know, some kind of hanky-panky going on, or you're a homosexual, or you're this, or you're that, or whatever. Owen was happy to kind of go along with whatever role they would lay out, but this was a little bit too much for his kids and his wife, you know, too. You know, she was kind of very possessive of him, and maybe rightfully so. Owen was quite a catch. He was a gifted human being.
Yes.
And, you know, he and his wife had a very, very straight relationship, very, you know, no infidelity ever in any sense of the word that was even thought of. So you got to give him credit for being a worldwide athlete and celebrity that he was so straight-laced. Not too many people can sort of say that or, you know, could, you know, my father was one, you know, totally, you know, he didn't care about anybody but my mother.
So do you feel, or did Owen feel at that time that he was being punished by, they give him the Blue Blazer gimmick again? Was that kind of the feeling at that time?
Maybe, you know, I can't really say that. I've seen instances where they did stuff like that. I think they made Kim Neidhart dress up like a fuzzy bumblebee or something for some indiscretion that he did, or something he didn't comply with or fail to deliver on, and I've seen them make fools out of people often enough, but I don't know that was the case with Owen. I know coming down the wire itself, though, that was a little bit different. Owen didn't, as good as he was on his feet, and you know, with his passing of Randy Savage, it really reminded me of Owen a lot. Owen, and he did a lot of the same moves, but I think just Owen didn't like heights that much. He had trained to become a firefighter, actually had laser surgery on his eyes. That you know, he didn't like that. You know, there's a certain risk factor in that. It makes it sound easy in some of the ads, but basically he thought about it. He hedged and hawed. Finally, he went for it because he wanted to be with his kids. It wasn't that he didn't want to wrestle. If we had had a wrestling promotion still going in Calgary, he would have been happy to wrestle and be kind of close to his family, but for lesser money even. But he was so good that every time his contract would be coming up and he'd be saying, I'm retiring, and, you know, you want to be a firefighter like my brother Keith. And, but he's had a fear of heights, you know, he really did, some of the firefighting, prerequisites, Keith took him through. He said, gee, that's high up, or boy, I wouldn't want to fall through this, or, you know, he had a little fear of heights, like most people probably do. You get up too high on a diving board or a tree or a cliff or something, you realize that there's a, you know, you could hurt yourself coming down or kill yourself if you didn't, you know, use sense. But anyhow, he told Vince, I don't like this, coming down the cable, and, you know, it gives me the creeps. And they talked him into doing it once, and he talked to his wife, Martha, and she didn't like it either. But when originally they said, look, Owen, there was 1,500 people waiting to take your job, you know, like you're just one of the ants in the nest here. So he thought about it, and then they also, had a serious intention of making him the world champion the next day. And Owen's career, as good as he was, and, you know, all the things he'd done so well, he was just getting started. They were just getting started, the WWE, with him. They were going to, you know, use him very effectively, despite he wasn't one of the biggest guys in the world, the height-wise and all that, but he was one of the best, you know, talkers and actors and wrestlers they had, and a hell of a good singer. He and Coco Beware made some pretty good songs on some of those fairly lousy discs that the WWE used to sell.
Right. Now, there was a comment. I don't know what your relationship is, or what the family relationship is to Rowdy Roddy Piper, but he did make a comment one time that he blamed Vince Russo for Owen's death, that Vince Russo booked Owen to be the Blue Blazer again and then came up with, you know, putting him on the high wire. What's your thought on that?
You know, I've never met Vince Russo. I'd like to have met him, but I don't blame anybody in particular for no matter what script they came up with. I can't say that that's the cause for death. I think that's kind of a cop-out. I think Vince Russo's ideas basically suck, and most of the ideas I've seen in the WWE for years have, there's exceptions, you know, where they had something big, but well, I think most of the Hollywood scripters are pathetic and unnecessary, and I don't really understand why they're there ever. And I think the wrestlers had a, the promotion, the wrestlers collectively or even individually had much better sense of, of storylines and angles. You lose when you gotta act around the script. All my life it was, Art, you're going 20 minutes, you're putting this guy over, you're winning, you know, do whatever, figure out a finish. It wasn't ever main event stuff. I didn't even want to wrestle, to tell you the truth. I wanted to promote, I wanted to be a Stu Hart promoter or Vince McMahon, not a, you know, my dad used to tell people, and no offense to Brett, because I actually don't agree with this, I think that Brett's a better wrestler than I ever dreamed of being, but my dad would tell people, you know, with genuine, conviction that I could have been the best wrestler in the world, or I could have been better than Brett. And, I would step in, whether he could be talking to the sports editor of the Calgary Herald, I'd say, I didn't want to be a wrestler. I wanted to be you. I wanted to be like a Vince McMahon, the sky's the limit. You know, it wasn't my investment. The Calgary promotion, it was my father's blood, sweat, and tears, and investment, cash investment that went into all that. You know, he actually paid $50,000 for someone to step out of the picture in Calgary in 1950, 51 or something like that. Whereas he bought our whole house, which sold for, it's on sale right now, just the bare house on a small piece of its original 35 acres, and before that it was 400 acres in 1901 when it was built, but we bought it in 1950 from a judge who picked it up for $2,500 after the war, World War One, for $2,500 tax sale. So we got it for $25,000 with 35 acres and a carriage house in the butler's quarters where the judge lived. It remained, and we never did get that. My dad was all set to buy it. My mother threatened to kill herself if he did. But anyway, that house, that we walked away from the entire territory, not just the Calgary where he paid $50,000 for the guy to leave. He wanted to buy us out in Edmonton. Without both towns, Calgary and Edmonton, that whole Alberta, Saskatchewan, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming's, circuit was really worth nothing. It was, you needed those two big towns to make any of it worthwhile. The other ones were too far out and too small. And, mountains and winter and all that. It was crazy. Some of those pathetic gates we would drive so many miles for it. But it all, win, lose, or draw, you make it up to kind of feed this fault, My dad could have been a filthy rich, man, He was richer than Abe Bellsberg, one of the richest men that ever settled in Calgary at one time, but he had 12 kids to feed, and a huge house to maintain, so,
right.
That's where his money went. And we were fed well. We weren't living on Kraft dinner and Kool-Aid. All very healthy stuff. We had our own chickens and cows and goats for milk and a huge vegetable garden and, caretakers taking care of all the stuff in the old former Karen's house. We lived a very healthy, isolated life. We were our own unit. We had a birthday party. Nobody was invited. We had enough. We had 12 kids of our own, eventually. And none of the neighbor kids were our age. We had one neighbor that finally moved in when the judge moved next door. He was crippled, so he had to have a place with one floor. And my dad, in fact, used to carry old Judge Patterson up to his second floor shower because he didn't have a shower on the first floor in the former butler's quarters next door. So they moved next door. But there was never no Halloween. You know, but we had no candy in the house, no pop, no cigarettes, no smut, no drugs, of course, no nothing. We didn't even have you couldn't even find an aspirin in our house. You're lucky if you found a Band-Aid. You know, we often skinned ourselves up and cut ourselves, have to go to a hospital and get stitched up sometimes, you know, but the lumps and bruises and stuff just came and went. No big deal, you know?
Yeah.
So.
What, I was curious, quickly going back to Owen, what was your thoughts on, the next night on Raw when it was a 2-hour, you know, tribute to Owen? Did you think that was a good move on Vince's part to, you know, really suspend all the storylines for the night and do a tribute show to Owen?
Yeah, of course. I think that was more or less what I would have done, I suppose. It's paying respect on one hand, and behind the scenes there's a little business there, you know, like a free show that everybody's watching, everybody's glued to. You got more, you know, viewers than ever because of the controversy and the vast publicity. But I basically respected that, just like I thought when they did the same thing for Chris Benoit. They did that. And I was very saddened by Chris's the whole scenario and his death. The day before I was watching, waiting for Chris because I understood he was going to win the world title that night, that he never showed up. And I was with a lot of friends right in this area here, but Ontario then. But yeah, I don't know. I think when they backtracked on Benoit, not to digress from Owen, but and sort of pulled the plug on him and banned him, kind of, and you know, apparently they went to the futile bother of erasing all his tapes and images, and there'd never be another reference to Chris Benoit, like he never existed. To me, that's all. Like his whatever happened to him, he was still a great athlete, a great person all the while he lived that I know of, and I don't even know that he necessarily. I think the whole thing was, I don't know how well it was investigated, but I think the whole thing kind of was just sort of buried, you know, and Chris was the villain. And, you know, the fact that he was as great a person and as great a wrestler as he was, as far as I ever knew him, you know, apart from that day where he was found dead with his family, I don't know. I think that's, I know it's a bad taste to condemn Chris the way they did. You know, they give him a tribute one night and then they kind of pull it all out from under him. I think they could have just left it and nobody would have cared. I mean, nobody really knew. I mean, you know, outside of, I don't even know what the police know about the whole thing. I think God knows and that's it.
Right. As far as, you know, Owen, he obviously has never been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Brett's in the Hall of Fame now. And
well, I would imagine, I think my dad is in kind of out of convenience. He's not even in the encyclopedia, which I know he worked for Vince's, he worked for Toots Mont, who was Vince's grandfather and Vince's father's partner. Toots was the big man in those days. But, they got the Blue Meanie in there 4 times, and they got the Brooklyn Baller in there about 14 times under about 8 different little roles. And, you know, there's a lot of people in there numerous times that you never heard of. You know, even a good friend of mine, Jay Youngblood, I never saw him wrestle once, but he's in there. We trained him, actually. He's Jay Scarpa's son. Great kid. I loved Mark Scarpa. He's in there. Lots of people are in there, and that doesn't really, maybe it's just an oversight and things like that, but they got some pretty pathetic examples in there repeatedly, and they don't have one mention of Stu Hart in it. I don't think that's right, but it's such a huge corporation. A lot of times they don't know what's going on. I think one hand doesn't know what the other is doing. It's
right.
Far down the line, I don't know. It's not like it used to be. I used to be able to call Vince McMahon on his private line at home. And almost like, and I didn't abuse the privilege of that, but I was able to get him when I wanted. Now it's like it might be easier to call Bin Laden, even though he's supposedly dead, and I could get a hold of the Pope quicker than I could get a hold of Vince McMahon.
Now, you know, going back to the Hall of Fame, obviously, Martha has been pretty adamant that she doesn't want Owen in the Hall of Fame. She doesn't want an Owen Hart DVD. Really doesn't want any reference to Owen on WWE television anymore, which know, from a wrestling, you know, from a fan's perspective, you can't, like you said with Benoit, you can't just write him out of history. He existed. He had great matches. He was a great character, great personality, etc. What's your thoughts on maybe Owen eventually getting in the Hall of Fame and then possibly doing the Owen Hart DVD?
Well, you're absolutely right there, Steve. The fans expect that and deserve it. And I think Martha will come around, or her kids will just do it. I don't know how they, what their, you know, they'll override her one way or the other. They want to know more about their father than they have been able to know. You know, they can't learn everything just from Martha's, I wouldn't say it is a sort of a warped point of view or a one-sided point of view. She's bitter. You know, the kids aren't bitter. They're too young to understand or remember. I mean, they should be bitter, really. They lost a great person. They lost their father. I'd feel terrible if, you know, I lost a child or a child lost me. Or, you know, it's just, it's, you can't get much more tragic than that. But, you know, I think they're denied Owen's honor, Owen's glory, Owen's legacy by Martha, not McMahon. You know, I think the McMahon family I think they're great people, actually, and they want to do something for Owen that way. It's good business, and it's good for the fans, and it should be good for Owen's family, and Martha is the I gather is the obstacle there, but I think she'll come around. Like you say, time heals everything. Martha has pretty much admitted that, you know, she's a little more subdued about this tragedy now in the later years than she has been. She's moved on, you know. She got certain closure, but it seems like every time Owen's name comes up, she wants to sue them and things like that. You know, the whole thing, the whole... You know, that's what I say. I used to be able to call Vince McMahon up and stuff. So after the hearings in Kansas City, Martha, one of the last hearings I heard, the lawyers all said to the Hart family that was there, Brett was there and my parents and Martha, you know, this is the time you got to really, you can't be friendly to them. When the judge sees you shake hands with McMahon, that's going to affect your settlement negatively. This is the man that killed your son, your husband, and all that. You know, so my parents were very cordial to the McMahons at all these different hearings leading up to this final, you know, it was a some kind of, I forget what they call it, but it was a thing, not in court, it was used by a judge. Yeah, it was some kind of thing for, in good faith, a hearing in good faith or something like that. And, they were gonna discuss the final settlement there. And they had accountants and a judge there and whatever. Well, my dad said, why wouldn't I embrace Vince McMahon and shake his hand like I've always done? I've known six generations of McMahons and this and that. And they just wheeled old Sue out to a dead-end quarter in his wheelchair and left him to fall asleep for the whole morning that this took place. Martha had been swimming, went back to the Kemper Arena at midnight, got them to open the place up somehow, walked right up to where Owen fell from, and went back to the five-star, seven-star hotel. These lawyers insisted on housing all of us, and swam laps till she went to court. And she went in there seething. And as soon as the McMahon family walked in, they says, "Helen, you look great." And my dad's absent, and my mother was sitting on her hands, pretending to read a book or something. And Martha just screamed at him, "You murdered my husband! You made my children orphans! You this, you that, you know." Well, Vince was taken aback by that. This is like a slap in a fairly important person's face. And I don't think that was necessarily called for. But because my mother, even though she was fairly ignorant, or not ignorant, but, you know, like playing the role that the lawyers ordered her to play, and not making eye contact with any of the McMahons, and just, you know, after she had, you know, not done that before, and all the other sessions, they were... You know, they were gentlemanly and cordial with each other. So, you know, but even with that, Martha, when we got our final settlement, Stu and Helen Hart got $2 million, but Martha refused to pay the legal fees, which was the original deal. And I'll tell you about the real original deal in a minute. You may have read about it in my brother Bruce's book anyway, but, you know, while Martha was, you know, going through this hatred with them, the next day their number, private number in Holly Hills, Connecticut, changed. I could never had their private number. I could have got it from someone like Ben, or I could have got it from my sister Diana, I suppose. But I just didn't want to, you know, I just sort of let things, you know, I'll see Vince on some of the tours through Canada and stuff, or in my travels, I'll show up at one of his shows. But those are the worst times to see Vince McMahon, when there's a TV taping going on. But originally, so you know, like, Martha got, I believe, $30 million or thereabouts, you know, 10 for the kids in trust, 10 for the lawyers in Kansas City and in Alberta, and 10 for herself. And the first thing she did was put $1 million down on the Alberta Children's Hospital Foundation for Owen in his name. But, you know, originally at the funeral, at the gravesite, Vince offered my dad $93 million, which would include what Martha would get. And my dad was inclined to take it. He told several of us, including Bruce, right on the spot, who was in the, well, Bruce was in the same limo. I was in another limo farther back, and so was Brett and Keith and Martha. But when they saw Vince and my dad practically shaking hands as they got out of the limo, they came barreling down there with the lawyers and screaming that Vince shouldn't talk to my father, and you talk to these people here and all that. And between Brett and Martha, they convinced my mother mostly, and my father kind of went along with my mother, even though he didn't, in his heart, want to. They, you know, I think Brett actually thought he could still put Vince out of business with this, or, you know, there was still bitterness and controversy with Brett and the Montreal screw job, which I'll give you my opinion about that anytime you want, but this was a way of grinding that axe a little more. You know, Martha was, you know, it was all, you know, stinging red hot then. It was all still current, even though it took, you know, maybe a couple of years to make the settlement. But in the end, you know, we got $1.8 million because we had to pay $200,000 for lawyers, and that money was put in stocks that went nowhere because of the 9/11. Martha got far less than she would have got. And, you know, Vince wanted an immediate, painless settlement devoid of lawyers and publicity and pain, you know. And he was even talking about buying some of my father's property and making a shrine for him, possibly even making a museum right out of the house itself, the dungeon and all that. Vince was actually very humble at that time, maybe as humble as he's ever been in his life. He was talking about revamping wrestling and making it more family, more wholesome and all that. And instead, it went the other way, that the Generation X stuff went, you know, ballistic. And, you know, they rode that pretty good. A lot of heels became baby faces in the process and all that. But it's just, you know, I'm living on the air I breathe, basically. I'm not wallowing in anything. I'm actually lucky to be where I'm at with my friend here, Matt Garrett. But, you know, because I could have been, you might say, independently wealthy from my share of that much heavier settlement that Vince had offered. It would have meant $30 million for my parents to divide up among their 10 surviving children. In fact, my mother was in a coma about that time, and died, and she never really enjoyed a penny of this hard-earned money, you know. Like, and at the time this happened, my father's stock portfolio had pretty much eaten itself up, dissolved itself. And, you know, we were, you know, we had no wrestling business anymore after that. Even when we resumed running, when Vince didn't honor his father, Vince Sr.'s original proposal to my parents, they went, you know, Bruce and my parents kind of talked themselves into reopening Stampede Wrestling at least once after that, you know, and it was never the same. It was pretty much a loss the whole time, where they dug in, lost more money than they would have if they just, you know, not run at all. So that money would have been very welcome, but it never happened. You know, Martha got far less, and probably a third less than half what she would have. Well, but farther, I think Martha got about a sixth of what she would have when you figure out what the lawyers got. And, you know, whatever. The money isn't everything. I'd rather, any one of us would rather have one alive.
Right. Sure.
For all the money in the world.
Now you're talking, obviously, this, you know, what happened to Owen definitely, you know, divided the family. Was the family divided before that, or is that something that kind of put?
No. No, they okay. weren't the least bit divided. It was just a horrible thing. We lost a brother, and it was, you know, and we didn't hate the wrestling business or the McMahon family or anything like that, even though it was a kind of a risky thing, and I didn't realize that they had to compete with Ted Turner, and this was just another thing that I don't think it was punishment at all. Like going back to what you'd asked me earlier,
right.
Owen coming down on a wire was just to kind of compete with Sting doing the same thing every so often on the WCW show.
I wanted to ask you too. What is, obviously you were talking about Owen's family. I remember when he passed away, the son was 7 and the daughter was 3. Now obviously they'd be, 19 and 15 or 16. So, and you were saying, you know, they're curious about their dad and they would like to know, have some answers too. And how are they doing today? How is Martha doing today? Did she ever remarry?
Some people might say it's nobody's business how they're doing and all that. I wouldn't even know. You know, Martha is so bitter and resentful about this whole thing. Like, in a general sense, wrestling killed her husband, the only man she loved, the big thing in her life, the father of her children. And she basically, outside of my sister Allison and for a while Brett, ostracized herself from, she just sort of exiled herself from all of us. Like, one day, when her son was on my Facebook and the next day he was off, like he became a friend. I wonder what the heck, what influenced him or how that worked, you know, and I didn't bother to, seek out answers to that. I just said, well, who knows? My first thing that crossed my mind was maybe Martha told him not to do that or something. I don't know. He was old enough to kind of make his own decisions, and he probably would have been about 17, 18 then. But, I think, she tried to distance herself from us, who actually loved her and supported her and adored her children. You know, those are as much my cousins as Ted Annis is, little Teddy Hart.
Right.
And, they're great kids. They're accomplished students and musicians. Martha had the wherewithal even before the settlement. Owen and Martha were having her, those kids were well schooled, well taken care of, well dressed at all times. They were very proper, probably as proper as any kids in the entire Hart dynasty. Their grammar was impeccable, and they had lessons in dancing and foreign languages and swimming, anything and everything. We'd pick our, I'd learn Spanish by going to Puerto Rico for 4 years. They'd get special lessons. I learned how to swim at Clearwater Beach. I had to get a certificate as a lifeguard to save money and as our family resort there outside of Calgary, out in 60-acre lagoon. But Martha's children are very refined kids, and Martha's gone to Oxford and got degrees, and I don't even know what. She's fairly distant, but she maintained a good relationship with my sister Allison. They were very, very close to each other, and for a while she's very close to Brett too, and he helped her through this horrible ordeal. He's very unselfish about that. But I think there was maybe a bit of an axe to grind anyway with Vince having let Brett down as he did in Montreal. So that was maybe an ulterior motivated act on Brett's part to some extent. Of course he would help his sister-in-law, but he had a bitterness in of his own agenda that way. But
Well, when is the last time you've actually seen Owen's children?
I saw Owen's children when we planted a tree for in Owen's honor. I don't know, maybe a year after he died. That's the last time I saw either one of Owen's or Athena. I saw them both in Owen's nice big house. Owen built a house right across from the Clearwater Beach that we used to have, the 160 acres. He's on one side of the highway, and the beach is on the other side of Highway 8. I went to their house in a limo, and from there we went to Fish Creek Park out in the south of Calgary, and we planted a tree. The whole family was together with Martha. It was one of the last times. The settlement was still going on, you know, and there's still a lot of bitterness, but, you know.
That's really sad. I mean, these kids are your niece and nephew, and you have, like, no relationship with them.
That's right. I expect that will change sometime or other, but, you know, it is a shame. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You're curious. I hear from the cousins all talk to each other. You know, my daughter will talk to her cousins and my nieces and nephews, including Owen's kids. And but that's about it. Like I wasn't really. I'm old school. I'm 62 years old. I don't know a lot about computers. I'm learning now, but I didn't, communicate with my extended family the way the younger generation does and do. And they were all, you know, Tanya would be asking me questions. She'd say, "Oh, she wants to know this about you or something." I'd say, "Oh, well, tell him this, you know, give her the answer." I think, I guess he doesn't have any other way to reach me. I don't have a phone. I don't have a fixed address and this and that, you know, and I'm basically a vagrant, but, these kids would, all talk to themselves, you know, locally in Calgary or on the computer or Facebook, whatever. And, I know there's curious, they wanna know, and there's really not too many answers. Like, you don't see anything about Owen on TV, you know, and Martha probably wouldn't allow a disc of anything to do with Owen's past wrestling in the house. She probably hates wrestling from, before he ever went to the WWE. Like, she really wanted to have him to herself. Just, the perfect little husband who comes home at 5 o'clock every night for a supper and the, do weekend things with the kids and go to church on Sunday and all that. She wanted the white picket fence and all that stuff. And Owen was such a good wrestler that wasn't going to happen. You know, and like I was saying earlier, every time his contract would be coming up, he'd say, "I'm going to be going on. I'm going to try and get on the fire department." Well, and Owen had a teaching degree actually, and actually had taught school too, but the fire department. That was a better paying proposition. But then they'd renew his contract. They'd practically double it every time. So he'd say, "Well, I only made it for 1 year or 2 years." And sometimes they'd want it for even 3 years. Nowadays, I don't think they're doing it that long. It's all kind of touch and go, and they want everybody kind of hanging by their nuts. And if they can get rid of you, milk you and use you and spit you out in a year, great. And make it where nobody else wants you. When you've been. And they have certain clauses in their contracts, of course, when you can't wrestle for anybody else for 90 days or whatever it is. So, they have the rights to your name, and, you're sort of a little bit limited by the time you finish from tenure with the WWE. And I'm sure other sports entities do the same thing. So,
yeah. But,
you're asking very good questions, Steve. It's a touchy subject, but it's an enjoyable interview.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. When I learned I was going to talk to Smith Hart today and talk about Owen, there was like a million questions I had for you, and I was trying to pinpoint the ones I really wanted to ask. And one of them I wanted to ask was when Brett left WWF. Of course, we all know about the Montreal, and you can talk about Montreal there too. He left. Owen wanted out of his contract. He wanted to go with Brett to WCW. They let Neidhart out of his contract. They let the Bulldog out of. Oh, I guess Bulldog bought himself out of his contract, but Bulldog and Neidhart was able to go to WCW. Owen wanted to go to WCW as well, but they wouldn't let him out of his contract. Thoughts on that? And, you know, I know you have said good things about Vince McMahon, but looking back, you know, maybe he should have let Owen out of his contract.
Well, I guess he'd be alive today if that was the case.
True, but I mean, the guy, you know, it's like if I work for you and I and my brother got screwed and I said, hey Smith, I want to work elsewhere. I don't want to work for you anymore. You know, maybe you just say, okay, this guy doesn't want to be here anymore. Maybe I'll let him out of his contract.
Well, you know, I think Owen was a true brother, and you know, even if it would cost him money, he might have wanted to jump ship, you know, and you know, the word was out that WCW was paying great money, and it was like a bottomless pit there, and a lot of these old herders took really bad advantage of it. Like they dug in, some of these former heavyweights from Vince's camp were doing nothing there but just getting high, and I don't even know if they were bothering with juicing up anymore, but it was like a big free feed there, and I felt bad even for Ted Turner. I respect him highly, and I look forward to meeting him this summer. I'm supposed to be going to some convention where he'll be, but I admire Vince McMahon too for that matter very much, but Owen probably, you know, in the heat of the moment, I would imagine, as far as I know, he tried to get out of his contract. And what really happened, as far as I know, is Davey Boy had $100,000. You know, there's always money hanging there that's due to you from merchandising residuals and this and that coming up. They're probably 6 months behind on most of their payoffs. So Neidhart wasn't doing anything much with the WE anyway, and Davey Boy was always, you know, pretty ready to go anywhere, but he had some injuries here over and over. But I understood that when Davey jumped ship, Vince basically denied him $100,000 that was due him. And if Davey wanted to contest that, he should get himself a battery of lawyers and, you know, he could buck him up against Vincent's battery of lawyers. So it was a losing proposition to do that. Davey just basically lost $100,000, and then Vince gave that to Owen right on the spot. So, you know, I don't know how he would have given it to him. It would be in a sack of pennies, mind you, but, or I don't know if it was all at once. But however he did it, he said, I'm going to give you a $100,000 bonus for staying. Now, maybe he said that before Owen made his final decision, or maybe he said it after, but I understood Owen got $100,000 for his discretion.
His loyalty?
His loyalty, yeah. You know. And yeah. Owen was a family man, you know, a loyal brother, but when it came to the final click, Owen would, you know, favor his wife and his kids. And probably he you know, and if, I don't know what, like if W, CW wanted to give him $10 million, I'm sure Owen would have found a way to jump ship, as I would have too. Anybody, you know, say, sorry, Vince, love you, but I'm off on you. You know, so whatever happened, it's too bad that Jim and Davey actually didn't get what they were verbally promised with WCW. I know they were kind of starting to go, you know, lose their any advantage they ever had. Like they had some ratings advantages for a while, but I thought their ideas, I didn't even really watch WCW much after a certain point. It was just a joke seeing Kevin or Razor Ramon stagger on like he was half high and half drunk out of his mind, you know, week after week, and seeing Sting never wrestle, but every once in a while coming down on a wire. I couldn't believe, and I'd hear the horror stories of how they're abusing this never-ending cash flow, the wrestlers, you know, and cashing in airline tickets that were never used, and all kinds of, just really abusing the system. I've seen it happen to my dad in a very much smaller degree, people that are, you know, pulling fast ones on you. And, you know, I'd always hated that. It didn't matter if you're Ted Turner or Stu Hart, for people to get paid more than they deserved and trick you and lie and, you know, pull fraud, you might call it, you know, when you're using, you know, taking advantage of airline tickets that you have no intention of honoring and just cashing them in and stuff. I don't know what train of stuff, but I don't mean to be rambling here, but Brett made the right decision. Like Brett, it paid off for Brett, even though he was abused. They didn't use him well there. I think some of those guys that were calling the shots there feared Brett. They weren't really wrestlers. They were oversized performers, and a real wrestler kind of maybe shook them up a bit or scared them. They didn't quite know how to deal with it, and maybe didn't want to deal with it. They were making money just being stupid, having, you know, this whole thing, it wasn't athletic even, all that NWO stuff. I mean, it was sort of a good angle to turn Hulk heel and do some of the stuff they did, and it got a lot of curiosity in the ratings, but it was not wrestling. I mean, to me, wrestling is wrestling, and no matter what, you know, how you twist it and all that, it still should be wrestling, and nowadays it's almost like wrestling is a blasphemous word. They don't even want to use wrestling anymore as a term. I really don't understand that. You know, to me it doesn't make any difference what you call it really, but, they seem to, you know, WWE seem to go out of their way to, you know, tell you and demonstrate that this is not wrestling, this is entertainment.
Last question about Owen, and then I got a couple of questions about your school and a possible book deal. Owen, of course, as we were saying, Owen stayed after Brett left, and I believe, as I recall, after the Montreal situation, he was off TV for a while. They brought him back, and I really thought when they brought him back, he would give him a massive push. You know, Brett was gone. They needed to kind of replace Brett, you know, his star power. So Owen was kind of going to get in that spot, and they never really pushed him to the hilt. I really thought they would have pushed him to the world championship. He never got there. Why do you think that was? Why do you think Owen never really got to the top of the mountain in WWF?
Well, you know, had he not died, he might have, you know,
sure.
Despite his shortcomings in height. Like, Owen was legitimately about 5'9", maybe 5'9 and a half. You could call him 5'10". You know, I don't know why they didn't. I mean, it's such a busy organization. It's so much, you know, I think if they got rid of all the chiefs, just fell through, cut half of them out of the picture, or three quarters of them, they could probably run a cleaner ship and know what they're doing, be more efficient. They got, like, a couple agents for every wrestler. To me, it's not a friendly, maybe behind the scenes it is a little bit, but even then, I've been backstage many times. I think it's too regimental and too, it's such a huge organization that the wrestlers are like little ants that are almost invisible outside of their television exposure. But, you know, from a business end of it, I think a lot of people don't know what's going on. You got all these different departments, and they don't seem to know what another department is up to. And I don't know really. I'm sure Owen could have foot the bill for anything they ever asked of him. He could have been as popular as anybody they ever had, as hated as anyone they ever had. However, in fact, he probably was with Brett. I remember one of the very few babysitters that we ever employed in the Hart family, old Lydia Furion, watching at a pay-per-view at Frank Sisson's Silver Bowl in Calgary, saying, "I knew it, I could tell," you know, and she's watching with fear and contempt almost, as Owen is berating Brett, and she, you know, double-dealing Brett and all that, involving my parents and all that, and she was such a mark and such a, I started to tell her, and she still didn't buy it. I thought, I'm not even going to wise her up in the least, at no point. I was going to say, "Look, Lydia, that's not the real Owen that you babysat. This is, you know, this is an act. This is a, you know, what a good act it is. Can't you see it that way?" And on, she was like spewing hatred, and she believed all this stuff. Anything she saw on that show, she would believe. So one was very good at portraying whatever they wanted. You know, he could be a coward, he could be a, you know, confident, he could, you know, he was, you know.
He did it all.
He really did do it all.
He really did. He really did.
Yeah, for sure. He was a well-trained, well-conditioned lad. Like, he never used steroids at all, ever. He barely drank. He wasn't even a coffee, tea drinker much. He did an autopsy on him and for various reasons. And he said his system was so clean, it was unbelievable. He expected to find all kinds of, you know, barbiturates and things in him. You know, being a wrestler, you know, a lot of times you have pain or you want to speak, you have to knock yourself out to go to sleep sometimes and this and that. You know, from long trips and pain and whatever, you want to wake up with a pill and go to sleep with a pill. I never did that either. I mean, I didn't have the career that Owen had, but my whole family were, I think Brett may have done some, taking some muscle enhancing products, like when he's teamed up with Jim, that would be an actual thought. But my whole family were very kind of, we steered, you know, we weren't perfect, but we pretty much stayed away from all that stuff. And any, you know, in fact, until my dad bought Clearwater Beats, not one of us, his 12 kids, had a cavity in their teeth. When we bought Clearwater, we were, you know, now this is where, like, there was never any Halloween. We never went out gathering candy and apples for Halloween. We didn't even, basically, it was a Halloween party at school, and that was it. But when we got Clearwater Beach, we were selling chocolate bars and pop and all this stuff, and we're eating it day and night. We're living out there. We stayed out there all summer. Every day you had to clean up the mess from the day before the gates opened and this and that. And, you know, when we weren't drinking milk, we were drinking Sprite and Mountain Dew and Coke and whatever, and eating chocolate bars by the dozen, you know, and we weren't supposed to. You know, it was all fabulated. Right. But, you know, kids will be kids.
That's right. And you know, as we kind of close out with Owen here, they can, Martha and WWE, whatever they decide to do, they can not put him in the Hall of Fame, they cannot make a DVD, whatever they decide to do, ultimately the fans of Owen Hart will always remember him. I've got vivid memories of, the Blue Blazer, the Black Heart, teaming with Coco Beware, the Hart Foundation. I've always got these memories. They can't take that away from you. So
I wouldn't be surprised if Coco Beware isn't listening to this, or if I get a chance, I got a number for him from a previous interview when he was on, and I called in 2 years ago, or maybe a year ago, I can't remember. And but if he's listening, hello, Coco, we love you, and you're a great guy.
Definitely. Quickly, let's talk about your wrestling school. And as I understand it, you had a hand in training the Highlanders.
Robbie and Rory were training at my Hart Brothers School of Wrestling in Cambridge, Ontario. That's no longer there, but I'm in the process of opening up at least one more school in the Greater Toronto area with the Watson, former world champion, with the Watson's son, Phil. And we're just, soon we'll have it done. We're saying, I talk to Phil every day and he's looking at places, and, I've got another, friend here named Matt that I stay with, and he's looking, Phil is a little farther out on one side of Toronto. We're all within commuting distance of Toronto, but, you know, it's a huge city. So, Phil's looking on one end of Toronto and we're looking on the other. And sooner or later, and hopefully sooner, I will have a wrestling school going, and I'd like to have one where I can actually house students for a year, but that all remains to be seen. And they'll get definitely genuine and earnest training here, train them like they're my own kids.
And talk about the book. That, as I understand it, not only do you have a book deal, but you're in the process of writing it.
You know, there is actually not a deal yet. I suppose if I pushed hard, I could get a commitment. I don't know if anybody would give you any advance money. It would be nice because I could certainly use it. But I've been writing a book. Bruce actually beat me to the punch with his book, yet having read Bruce's book, most of the content is not touching on my what I plan on writing. And there's been,
yeah,
you know, my perspectives. There's been at least a dozen books written about us or by us, by our family.
True.
And none of them really ever touched on the things that I recall and I want to mention. Now, I'm the oldest of the 12 children, and I've seen stuff that they wouldn't have seen. They weren't born yet, of course. And I stayed at the house, even though I was the first one to leave. I came back, and I was there getting calls from people all around the world, a lot of whom my family, my brothers, younger brothers and sisters who had moved out of the house would never have known, let alone spoken to. And I got, you know, like a pretty, you know, my mind isn't modeled, but in fact, I wrote a lot of stuff down over the years, and I have to recall, I'm actually going back to Alberta, Calgary, and Edmonton, both, where I have stuff in storage. I'm going to talk to one of my dad's original promoter partners, Al Oeming. Dr. Oeming is 86 years old, and he's still sharp as a tack, and his mother, who lived to be as old as he is now, she saved scrapbooks religiously about my dad's amateur and football. Anything he ever did in Alberta sports, she would have saved. He entered a Golden Gloves boxing tournament on a dare one time, and he won it. And she's got headline clippings about that. And my sister Allison has all the archives from the files in the Hart House at her place now, and I want to get access to that. And pictures. And my friend Bob Leonard, he's a ring photographer, a great guy. I just saw him at Cauliflower Alley Club a few weeks ago, and he invited me to check him out. He's got a warehouse full of pictures he took over the years of wrestlers from, you know, my dad's circuit as well as all around the world. So I'm going to have a very well illustrated book with, I have a very kind of cynical view of life, and I'm going to have there'll be a lot of catchwords that will rip people's hearts out, depending on, you know, and I'll be honest, I'm not out to, you know, paint somebody black when they're white to make my book better. It's going to be pretty much pure honesty, and I'm not out to, you know, hurt anybody. You know, this is, you know, certain things you have no business writing about, and I won't be you know, getting personal and behind, you know, sneaky. But there's this stuff that's wholesome and you know, highly controversial and interesting that I will be talking about. And most of it will be new stuff that people never dreamed of, you know. And, you know, it's I just know it'll be probably the best book that's ever been written by us or about us, you know, no offense to anybody else's books.
Well, we'll definitely look forward to it, and
I'll send you a copy, Steve. Whenever it happens, you get a complimentary copy from me, and that's my pleasure.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate your time today. And is there any way wrestling fans can get in contact with you to, you know, either you know, maybe send some thoughts of Owen, or is there any way to?
Sure. Yeah, if they want to talk about Owen or even Randy Macho Man Savage, I spoke to Lanny Popo. Lanny was born in Calgary when Angelo, his father, was working for my parents, and I think they're great people. And I'm just at SmithHart .ca or what is it? SmithHart One. It's SmithHart One, I'm just told now by my partner. SmithHart One, I guess it's numeral one, at Twitter.
Okay.
That's good for people to contact me.
If you want to reach out to...
They can add me on Facebook anytime.
Okay, I think you're just SmithHart on Facebook as well. So
that's right. Yeah, that's correct.
Definitely. Again, Smith, thanks for your time today. We do appreciate it, and definitely stay in touch.
For sure, Steve. Thank you, too, very much. Take care. Bye for now.